You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero o The Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of The Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Nō mai hoki mai. Welcome to episode 38 of Art Not Science. In this episode, we are sharing a talk by artist Anchi Lin. Anchi is a performance and new media artist of Taiwanese indigenous Ataya and Holo heritage based in Taipei. Perhaps she comes from to Alang, was a Physics Room offsite exhibition that ran between the 23rd of June to the 10th of July 2022. Alang is the Ataya Nation's word for tribe or extended family. In Auntie's work, this is a place both real and imagined, and a place to which she can return. In the work, perhaps she comes from to Alang, Indigenous Ataya worldviews are woven through moving image, performance, and the internet, recovering and expanding a space of queer community and self-determination. Without further ado, let's get into it. Kia ora no, Auntie. I wondered if you'd like to start by with an introduction to yourself and your practice.
Ramasu lokashimu kwara lalumaku ka jiwa stahos and chilling. Mingahun saku saji. Moana, kia ora. I would like to first acknowledge we are in the land of Naitahu. So hi everyone, my name is Anchi, and my Ataya name is Diwas. You can call me both, I like both names, so I'll be very happy if people call me Diwas too. Thank you for coming to this artist talk. I think first, I want to kind of talk about my background. I am half Ataya and half Holo. And Ataya people, I mean, like Taiwan has over 16 different First Nations in Taiwan. And we have very distinctive culture and language, even music and identity, and where we locate are quite different from each other. And for my people, Ataya people, we are mountainous people. We are mostly in from middle of Taiwan all the way to northern Taiwan in the mountainous area. And my background, my mom's background, we are from the Banagawan tribe. I think the closest would be like Iwi. So we are like Ataya Banagawan group. Tribe, Iwi. And we are the second largest indigenous nation in Taiwan after Amis people. And so that's kind of like my background. And my practice is I like to do performance art and video art. And here's my work. It's called Perhaps She Comes From Alang. And Alang in Banagawan language means tribe or community or extended family. But there are different ways of saying, in different communities, there's different pronunciation. So some people will say Ga Lang, and my people say A Lang, so that's why A Lang in this work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Well, maybe to start there, actually, to start with the title, and specifically thinking about this word A Lang, I wondered if you've said to me, like, naming is so important. I wonder if you can talk about that name and the ideas around that word.
You mean this work?
Yeah. Oh, the word itself. Oh, the even. Word. Yeah. So she comes to from Alang.
Starting, I think I. Okay. So maybe I think 2 years ago, I have been doing a lot of field research in different parts of communities in Ataya communities. And then I came across this story called Demahahoi. It's basically the story when where only women live. Mm-hmm. And should I explain the story?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of great. Like when I encounter, because when I'm doing a lot of field research in like these different Ataya communities, most of the time I hear a lot of more like masculine stories. Mm-hmm. Like for example, like there are two men carry a baby boy, and then on the journey to shut down one of the suns in the sky. And the son grew up and then eventually went back to the community. But anyway, that's just one of the stories that I found it very masculine. And when I encountered Demahahoi, when I was on the trip to my friend's place, and this woman told me, Demahahoi, it's a place where only women live, and they have the ability to communicate with bees, and they can survive by being on the rock and just like survive by eating the steam and smoke of some sort, and they can just kind of sustain themselves. But at the same time, they can produce female babies by lying on the rock with the wind blowing through their body. Mm. Just can get pregnant. Mm. And so that's how they sustain themselves. But also at the same time, they had, if there's like hunters trying to intrude their space, they would actually cut off their male organs and then put on the sticks and dry them and then use it as like kind of like dildo.
A dildo.
Dildo. Oh, sorry. Like, yeah, so when I hear this story, I couldn't believe this story was not being spoken commonly in the communities, in different communities. And then I started to look into the story more. So I'm very lucky that I have a supervisor in Taiwan. He has been very actively doing field research in different Ataya communities. Mm. And then he encountered this story in Nantou, Taiwan, where very close to my ancestral land. Mm. So he said, Jiwaz, I know this story. You know, I heard it when I was doing the research. Mm. So I was, oh my God. And then he showed me the book that he wrote in 2018. And he actually wrote that story in his book he published. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should look for more sources to see if this is actually a story being talked about in the past. And I found a couple more like books talking about Taiwan indigenous oral stories and mythology. So, and then I found, wow, yes. And then I was like, okay, great. We actually had this space. Yeah. Like, we actually had this story in our culture, in our oral story. So,
yeah. Can I ask, did you, in any of the research you did at the other sources, did anyone talk about it in relation to a queer culture, or maybe
no,
that word isn't?
No, but when I first encountered the story and I read many, many different versions, they are quite similar to each other. Just the way it's being worded are quite a little bit different, but the story are quite similar. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the story, I was just like, oh my God, this is queer story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think as an artist, and I feel like I want to reactivate this space with my practice. Mm. And so that's how I came about. I want to reimagine and rethink. Maybe this is a queer space. So I make it, I make the story connect with the story of the brass pot, mm-hmm. which I also heard from my research in Xinzhu, Jingshu, Zheng Xibao, the elder.
So
that's in the second, left video where there's a brass pot, where you can see this brass pot theme. So I encountered the story of the brass pot in Jingshu community in Xinzhu, Taiwan. And this elder told me quite privately, because we had a lot of good time there. And he told me that Jiwas, again, they call me Jiwas in the community, Jiwas. Did you know that we had in this our region, that Japanese used to give us a lot of brass pots, and then we use it for so many, like one or two generations. But then he feel very upset when he kept going on the story. He's just like, you know, like this brass pot actually made us cannot have, we like the chance of having babies are getting very, very low.
Mm.
And then the whole community believe it's this brass pot is like slowly poison them. And I found this oral story, more like contemporary oral story, intriguing, and I feel quite related with my own queer body. And that's how I construct this video work, so with like three different narratives, the story of the Demahahoi, the story of the brass pot, and also the story of my own queer body. Mm. So I weave them together and make the story in the subtitles you can read over there, and just kind of describing how these women or queer in a space no longer can survive, and how they encounter with the hunters. And also, by the way, like Jiwase is also my grandmother's name, so I kind of want to weave that kind of space together with my own experience and the space of Demahahoi and then the brass pot.
Mm.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's like three different things together.
So it's the story of the Demahahoi.
Yeah, yeah.
The queer body and the brass pot story
as well.
So if we just think about the work on the right-hand side and
the virtual land.
Yeah, the virtual land. Can you just like take us into that virtual land? How have you made that? What is there? Is it evolving over time? How does it sort of exist for you?
Yeah, so I don't grow up in the community. I'm more like the urban indigenous in Taiwan.
Mm.
So I always feel this disconnection with my ancestral land. And so for me, I always want to have a land for myself. And also I'm in the age of like digital time. So I started to look into how digital world and internet world can reconstruct that identity for me.
Mm.
So I used Unity, the gaming software, to construct this land. And you can see on the land there's like a red and black. Actually, I weave like little, it's actually our traditional color. The black is from charcoal. Traditionally, and the red is from Sunang. It's like from this root Sunang. It's the plant in the ground that has produced the red. So that's how the traditional color came about, the black and red. So I just weave like a little bit of the fabric, and then I skin it, and then expand it in the space. And then all the trees are maple trees. Maple trees are quite commonly seen in my ancestral land, like Banagawan community. We have a lot of maple trees. And because it's kind of like you keep evolving space, I want to add more elements in the future.
Yeah.
But also this is also connected to a cyberspace. If you have a chance to go to that internet on the sheets, it's also, I want the space to be kind of like for not just for me, but also like for more different like queer voices. So it's kind of still in the beginning of the project, but yes.
Yeah.
So that's how I construct the space here with the Unity, the gaming software.
So what if you think about some of the elements, like the billboards, the bees, the ocarina, I just wonder if you can like zero in on some of those and tell us the story that to which they belong as well.
Okay, so the ocarina, it's my, if you guys have the chance to go to the art space in Oakland, I have displayed a lot of handmade, self-invented ocarinas. And I also invite queer indigenous Taiwanese performers to perform with me. And then you will hear the performance and the sound from the other video I made in art space. Hoping to gather more people together and then create a sound.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Yeah, because I don't know how to, for me, this space is so vague and so I never seen any images about the space. So I just kept
the space like Temahahoe.
Of Temahahoe. So I just kept thinking, what are the possibilities to bring them together and to make this space? So the ocarina is kind of like my current ongoing project to use the physical instrument I make as a way to bring more bodies together and create that space.
And then is it your grandmother who's in the images on too?
Not yet. In one of the billboards, this is my grandmother's photo. But there's also another science, like talking about bee cloning project. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like my connection about like, if the Temahahoe people could communicate with bees, then if the bees are dying, then maybe this place is going to disappear too.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to connect that environmental aspect with the space too. And also, Temahahoe never written, like in all the resources I have researched, they have never mentioned where exactly it is. Mm. So that's why I want to make the virtual space and an internet space kind of pinpoint where that could be.
A space like the story can belong in as well, a home for the story as well.
A platform for the story.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that's the like, original intention of this this project.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's one other thing that in the conversation between the two women in the latter part of this one, where they're mentioning an electrical thread or something which...
Oh, yeah. I had done so
something
much.
Else which is troubling, like which is, colonizing their space.
Yeah,
do you want to talk
about
that?
So I talked to Abby earlier about this project, and also my supervisor in Taiwan, the one that has been doing lots of very deep colonial research in the mountains, he is really into looking, like kind of tracing electrical line, power line. Is that how I translate it? So that's basically like back in the time when the Japanese colonizers still in Taiwan, they really, really like a lot of our natural resources in the mountains, like camphor trees, because back then camphor trees are very important for making plastic and making film.
Yeah.
So they cut down a lot of camphor trees. But how they manage the indigenous, the Ataya people was use the electrical bombs to kind of like confine a certain area.
Yeah.
And if you touch it, you get electrified.
So is it going through like the trees, like everything?
It goes through the whole space, and then the electrical line just keep going shrinking. They just kind of keep pushing till there's no space for people to land.
Go hunting or like
So talking about space historically, it's the lands are really, really shrinking from that time. And a lot of our lands are become like a national parks, so the hunters actually cannot go, or like you cannot have like the normal living, like how the living style was like before.
Because it's like protected.
Yeah, exactly.
From people who need to use
it. Yeah, because it become like a national park, and if it's a national park, you cannot do anything to it.
Yeah.
So, but the space, the landscape here was inspired by the landscape in Belagawan, where my ancestral land looked like. So that's kind of like how I construct the space. And also I add like the pollution filter there. So if you can see, it's a bit like kind of muggy. Yeah, I add the, just kind of talking about this air thing. It's like really affecting like how the air is not, Temahahoe people cannot get pregnant anymore because they rely so much on the wind. But the wind are so bad, the air is so bad, so...
It's like polluted, it
cannot stay, sustain themselves. So this is more like kind of my response to like the environmental... There are many layers, huh?
Oh, there's the ocarina just off to the left.
Yeah.
One of those forms, So it's like made of ceramic.
Yes, ceramics. Mm. And I use the yellow clay from Taiwan to make, and each it has like different points. So you can, when three people blow it together, has different sound.
Yes.
So my next project is to make music scores from these performances, from the queer parties.
I just have maybe a final question. It's something I've so been finding so interesting talking to you is about your journey with language and learning your language and learning other dialects within the Ataya language generally. I just wondered if you wanted to talk a bit about that learning of the language, because it's very present here as well. A lot of people learning Indigenous language. And even when we're talking about the iwi or these different translations, points of commonality, and then, of course, massive difference as well.
So it's very difficult to learn. Well, there are like already 16 different, more than 16 different Indigenous languages in Taiwan. And there are not many language teachers available. And under Ataya language, there are six different dialects. And Banagawan dialect is very, very rare. There's basically no teacher. So right now I'm learning the Ataya school dialect from my teacher. I think what I've noticed here is like there are so many different Te Maori, right? Te Maori. The Maori language. Maori language.
Oh, yeah, like dialects as well.
Like on the streets, you can see the sign. There's like English and the Maori language.
Yeah.
And I think that would, I think it's so amazing that you can get exposed with these kind of things on a daily basis. But in Taiwan, it's quite rare to have this kind of environment. It's basically non-existent to see your own language being in the sign or like in the book or unless you really look for it. So I think that makes a big difference for the journey of learning the language, because so we have to be strong. We have to keep learning it.
It's a process. Did you say that for each dialect it was associated with a different river? Is it right?
The song called Maluhu. Maluhu is the song that you hear from the elder to sing where your, like how your ancestor was at a certain point of the river and then to a certain point. So it becomes like the song is kind of important that you have that in your knowledge to know how your ancestor traveled along which river to where you are.
Yeah.
So I think that's very beautiful that, you know, I heard about this story that my language teacher told me about Maluhu. But unfortunately, like my teacher was telling me that most of the Maluhu can only be conducted by men. But it's still quite relevant for us to even to know what the contents of what they sing, to know how our travel history was like along the river.
Yeah. Maybe one day in the future there'd be a story and it's like, your space is in it too, like it's part of the travel.
And I forgot one thing, like the posture I use for the last video actually is the burial posture in the traditional kind of when we die, like we do the kind of squatting kind of posture and then bury it to the ground. So I kind of want to make that reference to like the, I don't know if I should say the death of the space, but I just kind of wanted to use this like posture to
sort of like a grief, like a
grief,
is the element
rebirth,
of mourning that some things have been
rebirth. It can be both ways, but open ended for people to read.
That's why I think it's so interesting just to return to the title about how you've got it to, from something maybe has been lost, something's been left, something's gone or only just remembered, but also there's a future as well. Like I think this is thinking somewhat into the future as well and like the possibilities to belong somewhere, even if you've experienced some dislocation.
And and also like kind of reflecting back to my situation as an urban Ataya, like am I going back? Am I going to or from? Am I from? Like just kind of that in betweenness, it's has been something that I want to address in my work.
Oh, thank you so much.
I hope I explained.
Is there anything else you'd like to do?
I don't know. Maybe people can ask
me
questions.
I think Jan had some amazing questions. If anyone has some questions, please.
I have a simple one.
Yeah.
I don't really know the instrument. Is that a traditional instrument that you've reworked? Or is that something you've invented yourself?
I invented.
You invented it all. Yeah, so it doesn't have a traditional...
Maybe explain it from Zelda.
Oh, well, okay, part of me is like very into video game. So I know, do you know the video game Zelda? Oh, okay, that's okay. So basically in that video game, if you play Ocarina, you can travel through times with certain melody. And so I started to learn how to play Ocarina since I was like maybe 10 or something.
Because of Zelda.
And Zelda, but also like Ocarina is also quite popular.
Yeah.
When I was younger, so I kind of always had that in mind.
Yeah.
But as a performance artist, I also want to kind of see how instrument go with the body and how. So I designed a very wheelie to make it like body, like can potentially body can be engaged with it. Yeah.
Especially amazing, like, and seeing the work at Art Space, where you might have seen images, how dangerous and amazing it seems like after COVID for all these people to be breathing into the same space. You're like, oh, the breath is really, you know, loaded.
Yeah. But I really like when I was in Art Space, there's an audience remind me of like, oh, it reminds her of Lapita culture.
Mm.
And I was like, what is Lapita? I said, oh, look it up. Oh, wow. Oh, this like, Astronesian kind of, I was like, wow, that's great to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. My particular agenda, let me think.
Reveal it.
Reveal it. Oh, no. Can I? For me, I think I really want to, I don't know if that's my agenda, but I really want to really create this new space for potential, like how this gender binary thing going in the communities, and how could our old stories could be potentially not so gendered. I just think that with our ancient stories or old stories, there's the potential that can open up a space for queer indigenous in Taiwan or not just in Taiwan, and maybe at least they can think, oh, our ancestors actually have those space for us. I think for me, I don't know if that's my agenda, but I think because I'm also queer myself, I really want to see more of those space, yeah, and in our work. Yeah. And I see our work as like a lubricant to kind of foster that space. Thank you. Hope I answer your question. I don't know about that. Like, I don't, but from what I learned, like, when we, okay, that comes with the language. When we say wind or air, it's like ve hui is air. But also, there's another translation for ve hui is spirit. It's not just wind. It's, if you look into from the Ataya language, it has two meanings, spirit and wind. So when I keep thinking about that, I just think, oh, the spirit going through your body. And also I was telling Abby, I keep thinking about this is kind of, the story is kind of like personification of some sort of plant. Yeah, because wind and kind of like pollen seeds going through some sort of entity and pollinate and have babies.
And the bees in that metaphor as well, like the bees are like part of this ecological process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the body's just like one little part of a bigger system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I think you said to me that all of your works are works in progress, like you show them at certain points, but they're also ongoing. And I know with this, with your Glitch Me landscape, like it's also evolving. So it's quite nice to just sort of think, this is one like moment where it's like a lighting in Aotearoa in New Zealand, but then maybe we'll check back in with this landscape and, you know, months or years, and it's kind of continued to flourish or to change as well. So
yeah, it's kept going.
I love to think it's like, it's not the end. This isn't a kind of an end point.
So yeah. Follow me. You can see how the landscape changed.
Yeah. Thank you again so much. Thank you so much, Angie.
Yeah,
like, you came here, you did your talk in Art Space, and then you come down to Waipounamu as well and share with us. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be here and learning also from everyone, not just from everyone, like from the Maori people, from Pacifica, from each of you. Yeah, so yeah. I'm very honored and very humble to be here. Thank you.
Kia ora koutou.
Kia ora.
That was Auntie Lynn discussing her recent Physics Room offsite exhibition, Perhaps She Comes From to Alang. With special thanks to Daniel John Corbett Sanders, ArtSpace Aotearoa, and project funders Creative New Zealand, Foundation North, Auckland Council, and Taiwan National Culture and Arts Foundation for their support. The Physics Room is currently showing Pakanga for the Lost Girl by Heidi Brickle in our gallery at 301 Montreal Street in the Arts Centre's Registry Editions building until the 11th of September. We also have an off-site exhibition titled The Moon and the Pavement on at Ashburton Art Gallery, Hakatere Ashburton. The exhibition features work by Teresa Collins, Yukari Kaihori, Susu, and Sam Taus, and runs until the 9th of September. Thank you for listening. Tune in next month on Friday, 16th of September at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Hei kona rā!